back to another edition of We Do the Heavy Lifting. I'm your host, Dr. Jenna Yentis, and today we do sweat. Salt? Water? What is all of that? As Americans, we probably eat a lot more salt than we think of, or do we? And if you're an athlete, are you monitoring that? How do you monitor that? So today we're going to talk about all things that encompass those areas, and I'm really excited about our guest that we have today, Brian Snyder from Texas A&M Athletics. Now, you joined us in March of 2023. You're the Assistant Athletics Director for Performance Nutrition. So you've had a really interesting background. It's very different from what I've done. You've worked with professional teams, both football and baseball. You've been in performance nutrition for a while. And I've heard you speak on the importance of monitoring salt intake, monitoring sweat. What's your background that kind of led you to understanding the importance of that piece? And then we'll get into why that's important.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity. So when I was with the Broncos, I started with the Broncos when I was 20 years old, spent 14 years there. And my emphasis and my scope has always been nutrition. So everything that we're doing is through the lens of how do we optimize the things that we're eating to make sure that we are reducing the risk of injury, but also helping with performance on the field. Well, what I found is we were working with so many athletes, we were correcting their nutrition, but when they would go out to practice, they were still cramping up, they were still getting soft tissue injuries, and we couldn't really figure out why. We knew it was hydration, and I feel like hydration is an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of different things. Coaches, it's a buzzword. Athletic trainers, it's a buzzword. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're staying hydrated. Well, what does that actually mean? So what we tried to do is actually start to assess and analyze the actual composition of what is being sweat out. And so is it just water? Is it sodium? Is it potassium? Mm-hmm. Is it all these electrolytes? So I got into it because we were still getting athletes that would cramp up. We would still get soft tissue injuries. We would still see these things that were directly impacted by a lack of hydration. So I started shifting my attention, not necessarily away from nutrition, but trying to place a larger focal point on what they are doing from a hydration standpoint. Is it water? Is it Gatorade? Is it other electrolytes? What do we need to do to analyze that? And that's kind of how I dove into the hydration side of things.
That's really interesting. When we talk about sweat and hydration, I naturally think of salt because sweat is pretty salty. Yep. For the general person. That's kind of how we understand it. So can you break down a little bit about where salt comes from in our foods and our drinks? And most people probably think of it as just a shaker on the table.
Yeah, so salt is everywhere. It's in everything. It's a preservative primarily that's used. Anything that's processed, anything that you get in a grocery store, 74% of the things that you get in a grocery store is heavily processed. And salt is one of those things. And so sometimes I feel like when we look at hydration, we just encompass it with water. We associate hydration with water. And I will say too, just to the previous question, I was always at a high altitude place in Denver where hydration was a huge focal point. And now that I'm down here in Texas, obviously I don't have the elevation to kind of combat, but we do have the heat. And so when we look at where does salt come from? Well, salt's in all the foods that we're consuming, a lot of the drinks that we consume, and it's present in almost everything that we're consuming. And so, yes, you have a tendency to overdo. We all, as a society, has a tendency to overdo the consumption of salt and sodium in our diets. But I would say that the primary place is just in a lot of the packaged foods and the processed foods that we're consuming.
It goes back to making me think of, you know, as you learn as an adult, you're supposed to shop the outside of the grocery store. Yep. Everything, pretty much for our general listener, everything in the middle of the grocery store is processed.
Heavily processed. Whole foods is the way to go 100%. And we do try to do that with athletes too. I mean, that's a huge component nutritionally when we're trying to educate them is whole foods focus, something without the label on it. Anything that doesn't have a label on it is probably less processed. And so, and we're just seeing more and more of that processed food. But when we look at overall hydration, one thing that I was a little bit frustrated with when I got to A&M was, and it's not just at A&M, it's everywhere. It's as coaches, as trainers, as dietitians, we say, hey, make sure you get hydrated. Well, what does that actually mean? What is hydration? And so it's more than just water. Hydration is not water. Okay. Hydration is electrolytes. Hydration is water's a component to that. But what we see when we actually analyze and test sweat is you have two athletes. You have one athlete that loses maybe 8 pounds in one practice. Mm-hmm. That's all fluids. And we have another athlete that loses maybe 1 pound during that practice. Well, on the surface, you would look at that and coaches and we all say, man, this athlete lost 8 pounds, they're dehydrated, what are we gonna do? Well, when we actually assess their amount of sodium that they lose, and sodium is the primary electrolyte that is associated with soft tissue injuries, muscle cramping, and things like that, we're doing sweat sodium testing. We look at the sodium that they sweat out. Well, the guy that lost 8 pounds might have lost 1,000 milligrams of sodium. That's not that much. When you look at 8 pounds of fluids that's lost, 1,000 milligrams is not that much. You get that in a cup of Campbell's soup. I mean, that's not that much. Conversely, you have a different athlete that loses a pound, they might lose 10 or 12,000 milligrams of sodium. And that athlete is at a much higher risk of getting soft tissue injuries and getting muscle cramps than the guy that lost 8 pounds because they lost so much more sodium. Well, unless you test for it, you don't really know. And we see that all the time with athletes, especially down here in Texas, where it's not uncommon to lose 8-10 pounds in one practice. Well, what is that? Is it all fluids? Is it sodium? I would argue that the more sodium and electrolytes you lose, the more likely it is that you're going to get injured and have a decrease in performance. And so that's what we try to correct for. We test for it, and then we can strategize on the sideline and say, okay, during practices and during games, we need to make sure that your bottle is not just water. It's not just Gatorade. Maybe it's Gatorade with an extra 2,000 milligrams of sodium specifically to match what you're losing. And that's why we do that, is to get very specific with what they're losing in hopes that we're balancing that out through the course of a game.
So I've got two questions for you, both unrelated, but related.
Sure.
You said that sodium is the most important that's loss of sodium is what's giving people their muscle cramps or soft tissue injuries. Why do people eat bananas then?
I don't know. It's one of the many things that as I've grown as a practitioner and focus heavily on athletes, but also focus a lot on metabolic health and weight loss and things like that. Bananas for 1,000 reasons. I don't want to make this the banana bashing podcast, but potassium is not the focal point when it comes to I would actually place that third. I would say magnesium is also probably more important than potassium. But it's also an easy thing from a drink standpoint. We have a tendency to focus on the things that are heavy in potassium too. So a lot of the coconut waters and stuff like that, the alternative to a sports drink, that's what we focus on because it's a lot more potassium and less sugar and less sodium. So we kind of deem that as a little bit healthier. And it's really not true. I would say that most sports drinks do not put back the electrolytes that most athletes lose. When you have an athlete that loses 1,000 milligrams an hour, a tennis athlete, for example, that loses 1,000 milligrams an hour, but a Gatorade has 250 milligrams in one, 16-ounce bottle. I mean, it helps, but it doesn't really do the justice that we're looking for. So usually we have to add in more. But potassium is just kind of one of those things, like, make sure we're hydrated. Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Like, hey, make sure you have a banana. Like, that's just like the thing that's been told so many times. And I would even correlate it to people maybe who are not athletes, but who are trying to eat healthier. A banana is not what I would say is not a healthy thing to be consuming. It's a quick 30 gram of sugar carbohydrate with not a lot. Fruit is okay. Yes. Bananas is not what I call it nature's candy. That is not what we need to be consuming as a society to in the spirit of eating healthy. There's ways to work around that. I'd rather you have a cup of strawberries that has half the sugar and carbohydrates and more antioxidants than eat a banana and think that you're doing anything. So I don't want to derail us here, but that's my thought.
No, that's okay. I had to ask because I always think everybody's always like, oh, eat a banana. Like, oh, I've got muscle cramps, eat a banana. And I'm always like, well, you're telling me. So it sounds like that is just one of those urban legends that has just lasted.
Sure. Yeah. I can't even really, I don't think I've ever said you're cramping, let's get you a banana. That is something that like, I feel like, it's an urban legend is what I would put that.
So you mentioned that you can have an athlete that's lost maybe 8 pounds of fluids and maybe the coach tells them to hydrate. So they drink just water. Is there a point at which maybe they've had too much water?
There is. And that's actually a concern that we have. And even going back to when I was with the Broncos, I think that because we always educate on hydration is water. The fear is that you take an athlete that loses 10,000 milligrams of sodium and their spirit of hydration is I'm going to drink 2 gallons of water. and they think that they're doing the right thing from a hydration standpoint, but they're not. That's actually further dehydrating you. And you can actually clinically see what's called hyponatremia, where there's a huge imbalance of electrolytes that take place because you've lost so many electrolytes in your sweat and you're only dumping in water to chase that. And that's a huge educational component that a lot of athletes that we'll see walking around campus, especially football players, we see this a lot where they sweat so much and then they're carrying around a gallon of water. And it's like they think it appeases the coaches and the trainers and the dietitians to say, oh, I'm staying hydrated, look at my water. And it's like, man, you're almost better off having a third of that, but taking in 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams of sodium. That's going to be better from a hydration standpoint than just drinking water. So again, hydration does not necessarily mean water. Water is a component to it, but most athletes are better off not consuming so much water and and placing a huge focal point on the electrolytes, sodium specifically. So yeah, it is possible to overconsume water. And the reality is we had an athlete last year lose 16 pounds in one practice. We're not going to be able to get all of those fluids back before that next practice, but we can definitely get the electrolytes back for that next practice. And so you don't want to just chug a gallon of water and think that that's an okay thing. It's more of a slow and methodical process to get rehydrated with sprinkling in more electrolytes to go with it.
Is it safe to say that the non-athlete American probably needs more water? And I mean, is that an advice you would give to them, is like maybe drink less water and pay attention to the sodium that they're taking in? Or would you say go see a dietitian because you don't know?
Well, I would say for a non-collegiate professional athlete, when I assess all things nutrition, one of the things that I see is they're not consuming enough water, where they need to be drinking 60 to 80 ounces per day, or get two of those 32 ounce Nalgene bottles and be able to drink that throughout the course of the day, just to, as a template to kind of make sure you're getting enough. I would not typically, for the workout warrior or the person who's just, you know, exercising and working out, I don't think we really need to focus that much on adding sodium, because you're probably getting plenty of sodium from, you know, your diet, whether that's coming from a restaurant you're eating out, fast food, maybe even the things that you get at a grocery store. I don't see a lot of sodium deficiency. If anything, I see an excess in sodium. It's almost the opposite of what an athlete is, and an underconsumption of water. And so if you're not an athlete, you're trying to lose weight and you want to feel better and your energy isn't very good, I would ask yourself, like, when was the last time you drank, you know, 60 ounces of water? I mean, most people don't consume that much fluids just in general. So
is there a way that you tell athletes or the every average person to know if they are, quote unquote, properly hydrated? What I'm trying to get at is like looking at your urine.
Yes, looking at your urine. That's definitely a cool podcast topic. But it is.
Everybody loves it.
Yes, exactly. Everybody's excited. We actually have these charts that have been around for 50 years in terms of like color coding what your urine should look like. And it is still a very accurate way to assess hydration status that a lot of people don't really know or understand. Or sometimes we have a tendency to get too complex with what we're doing. And it's like we're doing sweat testing. We're doing all these different things. And it's like, well, like, what's your urine look like? Is it dark? Is it really dark? It should look lemonade-y. It shouldn't be completely clear. It shouldn't be dark like iced tea. It should be, you know, like lemonade. That's how you can assess, you know, your true hydration status. That's the general way to tell. So that's a sure way to kind of know at least where you're at. Also, are you thirsty? I mean, that's something that if you're thirsty, that's a first sign that you're maybe a little bit dehydrated and you should drink more as well.
Yeah.
So if you're thirsty and then you go to the bathroom and you look at your urine and it's too dark, well, you're probably dehydrated. So that's one way to tell without having to put a sweat patch on and assess sodium hydration. So
it's really interesting because I think so much about myself and, you know, ever since I don't remember when I heard you talk about it, and now it's something I pay attention to because I know personally I get busy and don't drink enough, and then all of a sudden my lips are dry, my mouth is dry, eyes are dry, and I'm like, oh, I'm way behind the
eight ball
now. Yeah.
Yep.
During your time with the Denver Broncos, you worked with a very successful culture there. They had a lot of winning when you were there. Probably in part to the nutrition.
Of course, all nutrition.
Right? What's something that you learned working with professional athletes that you've brought here to Texas A&M?
I would say that I think it's important to understand how all departments work and how nutrition is just one cog in the wheel to be able to assess what is going to be best for an athlete. I mean, athletes are surrounded by so many different people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, especially at Texas A&M, everybody talks about the resources. Resources are amazing, but it's the people that make the resources amazing. Mm-hmm. And I've never been surrounded in my life with so many highly credentialed, whether it's yourself or, you know, Dan Jacoby in athletic training or Howard or like any of these, like Bo Sandoval. Like, we have some amazing resources of highly credentialed people that if you were a business on the outside world, you'd say, let's bring the best, most highly functioning practitioners around, you know, our people. This is the people that you would want to reach out to. So I think trying to understand, and especially as the younger people who want to get into the field of strength conditioning or athletic training or nutrition, you have to understand more than just your area. You need to be an expert in your area, but you also need to know how a strength conditioning coach thinks and how an athletic trainer thinks so that you can build nutrition into what they're doing from a strength conditioning standpoint. Or when an athlete tears their ACL or they get dehydrated, how do we sprinkle in nutrition to the recovery process? So I think the thing that I learned the most at the Broncos was, you know, when we have especially like these really Hall of Fame players, like building a group around them that has mm-hmm. their best interest in mind, when sometimes they're surrounded by people who don't have their best interest in mind, but being able to say and understand how nutrition plays a role in all of the other areas is something that I learned. And when I came down here, that was really the first question that I asked is where are all the other people that are mm-hmm. surrounding them and how can I build nutrition and be an asset to what they already do? So that's probably the biggest thing.
Well, it's been really wonderful having you here. I can tell you that I have appreciated the social media posts that you've put out for nutrition and then your whole performance and wellness group together. I always find tidbits in there. And funny enough, talking about going to the restroom, every time the stalls always have something to read in there, and it's usually nutrition related. And I'm always walking away with something. I'm like, I knew that, but I don't use that. Mm-hmm. So there's always mm-hmm. little tidbits around. So I thank you for that. We kind of talked about the average person and hydration. Is there anything else the average person who's just trying to live a healthier lifestyle or maybe change their nutrition habit? Is there a little piece of advice that you usually start off with?
Yeah, there, I would say the two biggest areas that I see, and it's not, ironically enough, it's not even sodium or salt related. Mm-hmm. There's two areas that if somebody says, whether their goal is weight loss or whether their goal is, you know, they got their lab work done and they have some elevated triglycerides or they have some metabolic dysfunction, the two areas that I always try to educate and hammer home the most is, first, it's not the salt, it's the sugar. It's mm-hmm. we oftentimes will blame salt for what the sugar has done. And we have a society where, you know, in 1970, we had 4% obesity, and now we have 75% of our country who's either overweight or obese. And there's probably a separate podcast on why that is. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, the two biggest areas, in my opinion, is an overconsumption of sugar, carbohydrates, and too many times we're consuming food throughout the day. So we oftentimes are told, man, you got to eat every 2 hours, and we have to mm-hmm. eat 7 times per day. And the problem with that is that we are over consuming sugar and processed foods, and that's driving chronic disease, insulin resistance. And the only metric and data we need to look at is that in one generation, in 50 years, we've gone from 4% obesity to 75% mm-hmm. obesity. So what we've been doing hasn't been working. And I think we have to have some self-reflection on that. I think it starts with how much sugar and carbs are you taking mm-hmm. in? How much is your blood sugar going up? How much is insulin is being released? And then doing that 7 or 8 times per day are the two biggest things that I see as the culprits of not just overweight and obesity, but overall poor metabolic health. And so I would say focus on the quality of your meals, place an emphasis more on the healthy fats and good protein, less the sugar and processed carbohydrates, and don't eat 7 times per day. I always tell, like, we're not cattle. Like, we don't need to graze all day. It's okay to eat, you know, breakfast and lunch and dinner and have maybe a snack, but the snack should be protein and fat generated. It should be string cheese. It should be beef jerky. It shouldn't be a, you know, a chewy granola bar or oatmeal or a banana that mm-hmm. we say is healthy that is not healthy and it doesn't give us satiety. So those are really the two biggest things is be careful with the amount of sugar and carbs that you're taking in and don't eat those things 7 times per day.
It's good advice. I think as Americans as a whole, we're all addicted to sugar.
Yes.
I work a lot with people that come in from other countries, and they're always so surprised just at our bread, how sugary our bread is. We don't even think about it. It's
We don't. Bread, as somebody who has a wife who bakes bread, mm-hmm. shelf life on bread should be about 2 days. And good bread doesn't have 1,000 ingredients. and if it's like my wife's bread, I mean, it's 2 days. It's amazing. That's how long it should sit on the table. Yep. But most of the breads, when you go into a grocery store, it's got like a 3 or 4 week shelf life because of the extra preservatives and the extra sugar that they put into it so it can sit on the shelf for a long time. So those are challenges, and those are everywhere, but you're right on the bread thing.
Yeah. I do appreciate, though, you talking about how to eat the whole foods and not the grocery store, mm-hmm. The actual meats and apples. And
Yes.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's very, well, thank you so much for being here, Brian. We really appreciate you joining us for the podcast. We always ask all of our guests, is there a tidbit that you want to leave with our listeners? Something, maybe a take home for them or a piece of advice, anything that you'd like to leave them with?
I would say, I mean, this is just keeping it health and wellness related, trying to stay within my scope. But I would say everybody listening to the podcast probably has some concern about their health, mm-hmm. one way or the other. I feel like a true assessment of health requires labs and blood work. Mm-hmm. So I've worked with so many people who've never gotten blood work done. Like just go to your doctor, ask them to run some labs, look at what your labs are. That paints the picture of health. It's not your BMI, it's not your weight. Like true overall health comes from the blood paints the picture. So whether you're 20 years old or whether you're 60 years old, male, female, whatever it is, you really want to get your labs done and talk to your physician, who hopefully then will refer you to a dietitian as well if you need to. And that's the true assessment of your health. So mm-hmm. if you really want to know, don't look at the scale, don't look at any, don't go online, just go to your doctor, get labs done. And that's how you start your process when it comes to overall health and wellness.
So you're saying I shouldn't go on Facebook to figure out if I'm healthy?
Please don't.
Well, thank you again so much for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for being with us for yet another episode. And as always, if you have comments or topics you'd like us to cover, please email us at huffines@tamu.edu. And as always, stay healthy. So thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you so much.